Steel workers say Chinese tactics are costing American jobs.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. U.S. steel workers plan to file a complaint today with the Obama administration. They're demanding a government investigation into China's clean tech policies. The union blames China of illegally subsidizing its own domestic wind energy and solar panel companies, which the union says creates an unfair playing field. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
Bill Dodson says when it comes to the World Trade Organization, everyone should play by the same rules.
Any member of the WTO is supposed to treat both foreign invested companies and its own domestic companies in the same manner.
Dodson, who's an analyst with Trends Asia, has seen firsthand how China skirts these rules. Chinese clean tech companies get free land, tax breaks, and grants. He says none of these government goodies were offered to foreign companies looking to build green energy technology in China.
There's a very clear movement toward making the markets less accessible, less penetrable for foreign players.
And that's what the U.S. Steelworkers Union thinks, too. It says this type of protectionism takes jobs from the U.S. clean tech sector and sends them to China. The union's filing a case with the U.S. government. It has 45 days to decide whether to investigate. The steelworkers had some luck with this tactic in the past. Last year, they persuaded President Obama to impose tariffs on Chinese tires for the same reason. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
A story out today in Bloomberg Businessweek magazine profiles Terry Goh, the man who started the Chinese manufacturing company Foxconn. The company assembles all kinds of things, from iPhones to Dell computers. It was thrust into the spotlight after a string of suicides at one of the Foxconn plants in China. Critics say working conditions were terrible there, so Foxconn gave raises to its employees and opened up the facility for the first time to Bloomberg reporter Josh Tieringale. And Josh joins us now to talk about that. Welcome to Marketplace.
Good morning.
So there were all these suicides over there. Did you get a handle on why people were killing themselves?
The workers there, and there are 300,000 of them, are mostly young, 18 to 25-year-olds, mostly from rural backgrounds. This is their first exposure not just to work, but in many cases to people from outside their town. And so it's not, strictly speaking, a comparison about workplace suicides, where there have been outbreaks of workplace suicide in the past. It's really, the more appropriate metaphor is actually a college, where you get people from all walks of life with tremendous inexperience performing under some form of pressure, often for the first time.
You say pressure. What kind of pressure?
The pressure is a kind of pressure that I don't think anyone here can understand anymore. And that's when you're sitting on an assembly line and you have 9 parts to apply to a motherboard in 15 seconds. The level of concentration, the degree to which your perfection, your execution can either speed up or slow down the entire assembly line, it's sort of impossible again for us to imagine. But this is what people are confronted with. Hundreds of thousands of people are confronted with every day. And they're doing this, you know, to produce things that give Western consumers a lot of pleasure.
Why not take another job? Why not move someplace else? I mean, is it that difficult? Is the pressure that high?
Oh, there are plenty of jobs in China. And in fact, one of the labor watchdog groups we spoke to said, you could walk out the door and go to 10 other places to work. The fact that many people don't indicates that the treatment and conditions at Foxconn really are better than many other places.
What is it going to take for the average American to understand that in order to get those things at the most inexpensive price, it takes things like this? It takes tragedies and workforces that don't make any money and things like that.
Well, I hope that our story helps shed some light on how these products get made and what the sort of psychic costs of globalization really are. At the same time, I don't think Americans are necessarily naive about where these products are coming from. And they have some innate sense that just as several generations ago their grandparents worked some rather unpleasant jobs to build for a better future, that the Chinese are doing a very similar thing. The difference really is that the Chinese are doing it all in one generation.
Well, the story is out today in Bloomberg Businessweek, and Josh Tieringale is the editor at Bloomberg, and we appreciate you being with us today.
My pleasure.
World stocks are higher at the moment. Worries over Portuguese debt eased a bit after a successful bond sale there that had Asian shares higher today. European markets up more than 0.5% at the moment. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow tacked on 46 points, just under 0.5%, to close at 10,387.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality.
The unemployment rate is more than 9.5% nationwide, but a study out this week shows a bright spot in hiring, and it comes from a sector of the economy that might surprise you. Nonprofits get a lot of their money from foundations and corporations, and apparently they are hiring more workers during the downturn than even the commercial world is. Reporter Janet Babin reports.
The study's out of Johns Hopkins University. It analyzed data from 21 states from mid-2007 to mid-2009. During that time, nonprofits added jobs at a rate of 2.5% a year, while jobs at for-profit firms declined more than 3%. Professor Lester Solomon led the research. He explains why not-for-profits were able to keep hiring during the recession.
Demand increased enormously, and the stimulus program increased Medicaid funding, and Medicaid funding goes to a very broad array of nonprofit organizations.
But a lot of that stimulus money is going to dry up. Many organizations fear their worst economic times may actually be ahead of them. Tricia Lester is with the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits.
It's not going back to the way it was. The status quo is not going to return.
Lester says successful nonprofits will need to adapt to the new economic reality along with everyone else. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Finally, the Financial Times reports Kelley Blue Book has put itself up for sale. Now, Kelley dates way back to 1926. Potential suitors include autotrader.com, maybe even an investment firm. The Times reports Kelley's valued at between $500 million and $1 billion. Of course, that depends on the company's condition, whether excellent, fair. If it has any dings or it was in an accident, well, the price could really drop. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiantakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.